Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Great Raid, a lit RPG adventure by Ivan Cal. Narrated by Ryan Burke. Prologue. Time had no meaning. There was no thought. Only darkness as she slept. Until an instant, a waking moment. Her mind awoke from its slumber slowly, as slow as the birth of a star. There was only pain at first, an exhaustion unlike anything she had ever felt, and loneliness. A part of her was missing. He was no longer there. He who had given of himself to give birth to her, who had been her constant companion for time beyond counting. Memories came, and she remembered. A battle against their enemies. Her decision. Panic seeped into her mind as memories provided no answers. Panic that he was gone, and that she was for the first time in her life alone. She reached for her power, and found only agony. She blacked out, darkness covering all of her faculties. But as soon as she recovered, she tried again, trying to fight through the pain. Every time she tried to reach for her power, she found nothing but hurt. She did not know for how long she had attempted it, but eventually she learned. Her power was beyond her. But the pain she felt as she tried to reach her power was nothing compared to the possibility that he was gone. The mere thought that she could be without him was agonizing. And then she noticed something. A tiny trace. A connection. Weak and weathered, but there. And she recognized him. She rejoiced, and instinctively her mind tried to call to him, only for her to regret it again. She could do nothing. She was trapped inside her own mind, and yet a part of her realized that this was a preferable fate to death. She had never really considered death, never feared it, even though she had felt it through their connection. She remembered the sorrow when he lost his mate. She remembered the feelings of tiny beings being snuffed out of existence, but to her it meant little. She was unique, a being unlike any before her nor since. She was Moirai, and death was nothing before her. As time continued on, she realized that she could feel parts of her body, but she couldn't even move them. With her only being able to think, she turned to considering her situation. She was alive, but hurt, enough so that she couldn't reach out with her mind to him, that she could do nothing more than confirm that he was alive. Injured enough that her power was being denied her, it left her with little to do. But she had survived, and if she was alive, she would recover. He would not have abandoned her, which meant that she had to be somewhere safe, somewhere where she had the time to heal. As she realized this, she also remembered the second person to whom her mind and body were linked. Thinking was still hard, but she tried it anyway, searching for the pathways that connected her brain to the implants attached to her mind. Sending a message to her would be the best way to let him know that she was still here, that she was recovering. But Moirai could not find them anywhere. And then, as she looked for the things that were supposed to be there, she found something else. A net of tiny tubes, leading out and into her. They connected to her body and to her spirit, so many of them that it boggled even her mind. Millions, no, billions even more. She couldn't count them. Every tube was feeding her something, a thing that she would have recognized anywhere. She knew it by many names. Energy. Power. Magic. But the first name she had known it by was Sha, the building block of reality. She realized what was happening instantly. The power was feeding into her, healing her. Looking at it, she found the dark spots, parts of her that were so damaged that she hadn't even realized that she couldn't sense them. Her injuries were greater than even she had assumed. She was barely alive. She was being helped. The energy helping her to heal, But Moirai was not one to sit quietly and let others do the work for her. She studied the connections. The tubes connecting to her led to something, and she wanted to know what. Every tube gave her only a tiny portion of energy, but together it was a massive amount. She did not know what that meant, but she was going to find out. Countless periods of time passed. For her, it was of little concern. Moirai had never been like him or her, and time did not pass for her as it did for them. For all she knew, she could have spent centuries or millennia studying the little tubes. But she had a singular mind. Too, in many ways, even despite her advanced age, Moirai was still a child. A being that had no one other like her. The only ones who came close were the kind of her parent, the great Araxi. But even it could not understand what Moirai truly was. And how could it, when Moirai didn't even understand herself? As time went by, she gained insight, gained knowledge that many of the tubes led to living things, tiny beings that fed tiny portions of energy to her. Eventually, she realized that some tubes would feed her a larger portion in a burst, then grow silent for a while before they started feeding her again. Only this time, the energy feeling slightly different. She didn't understand everything, but she did gain some insight. They were giving her energy, but she was giving them something in return. She could feel the parts of her that were still asleep, working even while dreaming. She did not know what it was that she provided them, but it had to be substantial. After all, just her dreams were powerful enough to give birth to entire worlds. Then, countless ages later, something changed. She felt a new tube attach itself to her, and energy that was strikingly familiar start to flow into her. For a moment, she thought it was he, returned to her, but then she realized that it was not. The energy tasted like his progeny, yet it did not match what she remembered of his daughter. It was someone new. Moirai felt resonance with the energy. It was not his, but it was close enough. She tried to touch her power, to reach out and call to him, but pain stopped her always. Still, she was Moirai, and just like her other half, she could be very stubborn. Moirai set her mind to a singular purpose, to touch a piece of her power. The pain was everything, but her will was not to be denied. She was Moirai, and the very fabric of existence bent at her will. A tiny amount of pain was nothing compared to that. As the pain grew, as her world shrunk, she felt something give. And then there it was. A piece of her power returned to her. She rejoiced, tried to use it to tell her other part that she was here, that she was awake, but the power was merely a tiny sliver of what was needed. Seeing that she had no choice, she turned to the progeny instead. With the tiny piece of power she had won, she reached out. Following the energy coming down through the tube and saw the world through his eyes. The images were blurry, the sound muffled, but she saw a life. She saw fights, some dangerous, other not. She saw the progeny speak with her, and she rejoiced. Her glowing form making Moirai feel safe. But no matter what she tried, no one heard her cries. She saw him come to speak with his progeny, and she screamed for him to hear her, yet he never did. And so she resigned herself to a slow recovery. She had won a piece of her power, and she had a window into the world. For now, it was enough. Chapter 1 Morgan sat high up in the tree, surrounded by green leaves, standing on a thick gray branch. He kept his attention on the ground, waiting for his opponent. The forest was silent. The only sound was the gentle whispering of the leaves swaying in the wind, but Morgan had different ways of detection available to him. One of his oldest skills was his life sense. which allowed him to perceive forms of life around him, let him see a glow of life energy around people. A powerful skill, but one that wouldn't help him much now. He was in a forest, surrounded by life, which obscured his sight. It prevented him from discerning different shapes and life forms, so he kept that skill disabled. Thankfully, he had one more detection skill, nature seismic sense. It was, as the name implied, a skill that allowed him to sense seismic activity, vibrations in the earth. The limiting factor was that he could only use it through nature, or rather plants and their roots. Thankfully, he was in a forest, surrounded by trees that had their roots spreading deep into the ground. He put the palm of his right hand on the trunk of the tree he was standing on, activated his skill, and then he saw. It felt as if another sense had just opened up, and quickly a map of his surroundings formed inside his mind. He felt the tiny movements of insects beneath the ground, of small critters, but he focused and excluded such small creatures from his sense. He was looking for something a bit larger. Then, after a few minutes of scanning, something large walked into his range. Morgan smiled as he saw something large and heavy trying to move slowly, stealthily. If the level of his skill was lower, perhaps he would have disregarded the signature as an animal. But Morgan had been using his nature seismic sense constantly for the last 4 months, and it had leveled up significantly. His opponent was coming his way, so Morgan prepared the trap. Slowly, silently, he reached to his right thigh and pulled out a small weapon from its holster. He pushed the barrel down, opening it, and then reached to his lower back where his satchel was secured. He grabbed an item from one of the sections inside and pulled it out. The small wooden canister was bullet-shaped, brown, with a black line going around its body, indicating what was stored inside. Morgan slotted the canister into the barrel and then pulled it closed. The launcher was simple, a forearm-length round barrel with a small handle and a trigger. Morgan had designed and built it with the help of his friend from the last Vanguard team, Gravo, a dwarvar who specialized in artifice and the making of weapons. Gravo focused on explosives, while Morgan had turned in another direction. With his mastery of plants, Morgan had been able to create many different types of ammunition for his own grenades. Before they'd started their training in the tower, Morgan would simply throw his grenades, but the last 4 months had been all about streamlining their builds and focusing. Morgan's launcher was spring-operated and, most importantly for him, light. Gravo had a grenade launcher of his own, but his monstrosity was far too heavy for Morgan to use without weighing himself down too much. His one-handed launcher didn't have the same range as Gravo's, but it was enough for Morgan. Its range was greater than Morgan had imagined when they'd decided on going with a spring-based firing system, and with the materials available on this world, it was actually fairly powerful. The dark iron spring was capable of launching his grenades fast and far. With his weapon ready, Morgan waited, and soon his opponent came into his sight. Borodar walked slowly, his large double-headed axe held in his hands, his head turning slowly, taking in his surroundings. Borodar looked the part of the classic barbarian, at least to Morgan. He had a large black beard, and his hair was pulled up in a top knot. Two red tattoo markings ran down his face, over his eyes. The rest of his body was likewise covered in tribal markings. He wore simple and light armor, a leather top that covered his upper torso, and was secured with a single dark iron pauldron on his right shoulder. On his waist he had a combat skirt, and sturdy boots completed his gear. While he looked like he wasn't protected, Morgan knew better. Borodar had many skills and abilities that strengthened his skin, and the more damage he took, the stronger he became. Borodar was being careful, but he, like so many others, had made one big mistake. He forgot to look up. Morgan raised his launcher and aimed. He had no scope or any other aiming aid on his launcher, mostly because it wasn't needed. His stats were high enough that he could aim well enough without such aids, and his grenades didn't require a lot of precision, As soon as Borodar came close enough, Morgan fired. The spring released, and the round snapped out of the barrel. Borodar heard the shot and turned around incredibly fast for a man of his size. Seeing the round flying toward him, he raised his weapon, blocking with the flat of the axe. The round hit the dark metal and shattered, and black smoke filled the area, engulfing Borodar whole. Morgan moved immediately, turning and jumping. He activated his phase dash, and he floated through the air, his momentum preserved as all of his senses were shut down. While in his phasing ability, he wasn't affected by anything, and so he couldn't feel anything. His ability shut off on its own, and he found himself in the air between the trees. The advantage of creating an ability was that he didn't need to make any conscious effort to use it. His body did so all on its own, or as Morgan suspected, his soul implant did. It was like he created a set of actions that were bound to a single button, a macro. When he wanted to activate an ability, he pressed that mental button, and his body sprang into motion. The downside was that once an ability was created, it was set, and couldn't be changed unless he removed it, which cost a great deal of coin and resources. His phase dash moved him in the direction he was facing, activating and shutting down after he covered 5 meters of distance. He could have done so manually by using his phase shift skill, but that would have required him to focus on that skill, and he had come to realize that splitting his attention so much in a battle was disadvantageous. There was a reason why many combat-oriented Ascended relied more on abilities. As he left his phase, Morgan reached forward with his left hand for a branch in front of him. He was just a bit short, but thankfully his left arm wasn't really an arm. Klin, the symbiont that was Morgan's left arm, elongated and grabbed the branch. Morgan swung beneath it and released, landing on another branch a bit further away. He holstered his launcher and turned around, looking at the ground covered with his smoke grenade. Only a few moments passed since Morgan hit Borodar, and just as he expected, a blast of red haze exploded out of the smoke, hitting the tree where Morgan had been just a moment before. The heat strike cooked the leaves, making them shrivel and dry before bursting into ash, and the branch where he had been smoked and cracked, catching fire. One of Borodar's aspects was fire, but Borodar was more focused on its heat aspects, much like Morgan was focused on the life part of nature. The smoke parted, partially revealing Borodar, and Morgan took advantage. He focused his mind and used his arcane mark ability, causing a thin thread of energy to snap at Borodar, marking him. Morgan immediately took cover behind the trunk, not wanting his opponent to see him. Then Morgan focused, and Klin shifted. His hand split down the middle, the fingers blending together and elongating, one half downward and the other upward. His symbiont lost the skin coloration and turned dark red, and a few moments later, Klin morphed into a longbow, the material mimicking that of redwood, and a string that had more metallic properties grew out of the limb and tightened, drawing back. Morgan put his hand on it and pulled. His strength wasn't all that impressive for people who existed here, but compared to those on Earth, he was stronger than any human ever could be. Klin was a living entity itself, too. Just as it could replicate the materials of a bow that Morgan had to consume, the limbs pulled back by themselves as well, helping him pull the bowstring. He had a few more ideas on how to improve the Klin's bow, but it was a work in progress. Concentrating, Morgan used his ability Exploding Arrow to craft an arrow out of the energy he pulled from his core. He used his metal aspect energy simply because he had found that it had more power. The ability allowed him to place an enchantment into an ordinary arrow, but he could also just create an energy arrow as well. That had been a new development. After he had experimented with consolidating and upgrading his abilities under his teacher's guidance. With his arrow ready, he reached out to the tree he was sitting on and used his sense to pinpoint his opponent's location. Borodar had moved out of the smoke cloud and was searching the treetops, but he obviously didn't know where Morgan was. Then, just as Morgan noticed Borodar looking in the wrong direction, he moved. He leaned out of his cover and aimed his bow. Since his bow was formed out of his arm, out of Klin, he didn't have a finger to lean the arrow on, but he had shaped a shelf as well as a scope above it. He aligned it with his target. His sharpshooter skill taught him how to properly aim, and then he let go of the string, shutting off his phase in the process. The energy arrow flew out of the bow, heading straight at Borodar. Somehow the man again noticed Morgan's attack and turned around, his axe coming up to block, but not fast enough. The arrow hit him in the chest and exploded. The metal aspect that filled the arrow had been instilled with the power of gravitation and mass, since those were the areas that Morgan specialized in for the metal aspect. The blast was a shockwave that sent Borodar flying back into a tree. Morgan moved back into cover immediately, his right hand grabbing his launcher even as he used phase dash to move to another location through the tree trunk. Klin morphed and grabbed another branch as soon as Morgan was out of his phase, swinging him up on another tree. Behind him, he heard a roar, and glancing behind him, Morgan saw that Borodar's skin had turned slightly red, and that his markings were glowing. He had first seen that form during the tournament, but Morgan had witnessed it a few times after. It was Borodar's strongest ability. It increased all his stats and made him able to ignore pain. Borodar started swinging his axe, sending blasts of heat into the trees, setting them on fire. Morgan quickly ducked back into cover and put his launcher into his left armpit and grabbed the lever on the side, pulling both it and the launch spring back before opening the barrel. He grabbed another grenade from his back, this one with a red line around the body, and he loaded it into the barrel. He locked it and grabbed it with his right arm. A blast of heat set the branches next to him on fire, but he didn't move. Instead, he focused. Klin morphed back into the bow form, and then from the back of his arm grew out a tendril that quickly shaped itself into the form of an arrow. He made sure to blunt the tip, and then the tendril moved the arrow into the slot on the bow and pulled the string back. He could have pulled an arrow out of the quiver on his back, but he needed more practice with having Klin taking different shapes and manufacturing different materials. He could feel Klin struggling to pull it back, so Morgan phased the arrow and the bow. He holstered his launcher and then put his hand on the trunk of the tree behind him. He used mass exchange, an ability that he had created as an alteration of his mass transfer ability, and pulled the mass out of the tree and fed it into Klin, who in turn fed it to the arrow. The arrow became denser, heavier, but because it was phased, it was weightless, though he could still interact with it since it was technically still a part of his body. He didn't put too much mass into it, but it would help. Mass exchange was an ability, which meant that it was streamlined. It exchanged mass between whatever he was touching and Klin, but it only transferred around 5 kilograms worth of mass. He had created the ability so that he didn't need to focus during combat and channel with mass transfer, which would transfer mass while he kept his focus. This way, he could transfer a bit of mass in an instant. He pulled out his launcher and left cover. Borodar saw him immediately, his eyes narrowing and his axe rising to fire a heat blast at him, but Morgan leveled his launcher before he could attack. He pressed the trigger, and the spring launched the grenade forward. Borodar fired his heat blast, and the wooden grenade cracked and caught fire, igniting the flammable gas inside. An explosion filled the area, throwing Borodar back. Morgan jumped from his branch, using his acrobatic skill to jump from branch to branch until he was flanking Borodar, who had just gotten back up to his feet. Morgan aimed his bow and then focused on Klin. The small part of him connected to the arrow snapped, releasing the arrow as it shot forward. As soon as it left his area of influence, it unfazed, and all of the extra mass hit Borodar in his shoulder with a resounding crack, probably cracking bone. The man flew to the side and rolled over the ground. Morgan reached up to a quiver and pulled out an arrow. He had created the first one because he didn't have any blunted arrows left, and he didn't want to kill Borodar. He knocked the new arrow, which had a small canister at the tip. Morgan pulled back the string before Borodar could recover. He fired, and when the arrow hit the ground, the canister at the tip shattered, the plant inside spilling on the ground. Morgan activated his accelerated growth ability, and his energy reached out to the plant. Its roots stabbed into the ground, even as the rest of it shot for Borodar, growing and tying him down. Borodar shook his head, looking down at the trip vine that was tying him down and trying to break free. But Morgan had upgraded his trip vine since the last time he used it against the man, and it was now far more durable. Even still, Borodar roared, steam rising from his body, and the trip vine caught fire and burned up in an instant. Borodar stood, looking at Morgan, just as he released another arrow at his opponent. The fighter raised his axe, blocking, but the force of the attack sent him flying back into a tree. Morgan saw him hit the tree hard, and then fall to the ground. Morgan knocked another arrow, but didn't approach the lying body of his friend.
"You do realize I know you're faking it, right?"
Morgan asked from a safe distance. Borodar didn't react, still pretending to be unconscious.
"Come on, I won't fall for the same trick twice."
When Borodar didn't answer, Morgan was tempted to just let another of his concussive arrows hit him, but he dismissed the idea. Borodar could genuinely be unconscious, and if he did shoot at him, well, Morgan wasn't about to do that to a friend. So he approached slowly.
"Borodar, buddy,"
Morgan called as he got close to the man. And then Borodar moved, but this time, unlike the last time he did this to him, Morgan was ready. He activated his phase dash and phased through his friend as he was trying to tackle him. As soon as he unfazed, Morgan turned and let his arrow fly point blank. Borodar grunted as he took the arrow in the stomach and flew back, falling to the ground hard and rolling.
"I told you I wouldn't fall for that again,"
Morgan yelled, and Borodar groaned from the ground as Morgan fired another tripvine arrow and had it tie him up. Seeing him trying to get out of it again made Morgan chuckle. Before Morgan had a chance to advance, the space between them bent and a man stepped out. Morgan stopped and lowered his bow, Klin morphing back into the form of an arm. Azeel glanced at them both, then nodded.
"Morgan wins," Azeel said.
Borodar groaned, and Morgan reached out to the tripvine with his phytokinesis, releasing him. Azeel watched them as they walked over to him.
"Come, we should discuss your actions."
With that, the other ascendant turned around and started walking, Morgan and Borodar sharing a glance before following behind him. Chapter 2. Less than an hour later, Morgan was sitting at a wooden table behind a medium-sized cabin. They were close to the town of Hedos, which was Azeel's home. Across from him sat Borodar, with Clara standing next to him, her hands hovering over his shoulder, healing his wounds. The other people present were Vrishar, a gnoll, and Hexna, a human, who were part of Borodar's adventuring team, the last vanguard. The rest of their team was half a world away dungeon diving along with the rest of Morgan's team. Borodar's last vanguard and Morgan's Skyforce had both participated in the tournament organized by the two great guilds in order to find teams that they would take with them into the Tower of Power. Both Morgan's and Borodar's teams had secured a place in the raid, and in about a month's time, they would present themselves to the great guilds for training. The great guilds that were organizing the tower climb intended to create a formidable team that would climb to the top, a feat that no one had ever achieved, as far as anyone was aware, that was. No one had ever returned from beyond the third floor of the tower, and the two great guilds, the Urtherium Riders Guild and the Call Guild, intended to be the first. After the end of the tournament, the teams that had been chosen had been given 5 months' time to put their affairs in order before reporting to the great guilds for training. Borodar and his team didn't have much work to take care of. They were a part of a guild, but they weren't its leaders, and so when Morgan asked for them to come to Skyreach with them, they agreed. That was 4 months ago, and since then both teams had been training with Azeel. The silver-haired man was powerful,
over level 40, and Morgan had managed to convince him to teach them all.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?